Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Big Strong Leicester Boys podcast. So another defeat, QPR this time, and that makes it three league defeats on the bounce. So that 15, 16, 17 point cushion has now become just three. Ipswich there, Leeds not too far behind as well. So it hasn't been the best of weeks in the history of Leicester City. So let's do a podcast. Delighted to say we have got Rick and we've got Jordan joining us this afternoon. Kind of slightly stranger time we're doing it today, but I think we're going to quite enjoy it. It means, by the way, that Rick is going to be sober because it's far too early in the day to be drunk. And we've got a special guest as well today. And we're joined by The Athletic's Rob Tanner. Rob, I'm going to come to you first. Rob, good afternoon. How are you? And thanks for coming on.
I'm great. Where does that music come from, by the way? The Leicester Fiesta. Where's that? Who recorded that?
Is it Martin Harvey? Am I right in saying that? Is that the name?
I think so. Hang on, I'll Google it.
Yeah, we found it. we then tried to get in contact with the chap to see if we had permissions to use his music. Had no luck, so we thought we'll just go with it anyway, and nobody's complained. So yeah, and it's now obviously become somewhat, you know, the theme tune. Or yes, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Any luck, Rick?
Yeah, Martin Harvey, you're right.
It is Martin Harvey. Yeah. So I mean, hopefully that kind of brings a kind of slightly more upbeat feel to the start of the podcast. But Rob, I think that, you know, the topics maybe today aren't probably going to be the most cheery. I think there's going to be some conversations around finances a little bit later on as well. If people have seen a couple of the articles, I think it's from The Sun that's been out today about some possible issues for us. But Rob, where to start, really? I mean, should we start with QPR first and foremost? I think the question or the title of the podcast is it time to panic? And so that's kind of the question to kick things off nice and easy.
Well, funnily enough, I published my match piece this morning where saying it's time for calm heads. I mean, I haven't seen Enzo that down at all this season. I mean, normally after a defeat, he comes out, he's quite bullish, smiles, tries to be positive and upbeat. But even his body language after the QPR one, he looked like that really hit him hard. I mean, the previous two defeats, there was some mitigation in the amount of chances they missed. But that always gives you hope because you're creating chances. But I looked at the stats on for the game QPR, and nearly 75% possession, 18 efforts on goal to their 3, 5 on target to their 2, 9 corners to none for QPR. That is it. Those stats, that is a game you should not be losing. But what struck me about this one compared to the other two was that QPR looked comfortable. They didn't look like they were being stressed or concerned too much. They were sitting in there deep in their system, their formation, soaking it up. And Leicester just didn't have any answers to open them up. I mean, I say 18 efforts. I mean, a lot of them weren't troubling Begovic in the goal at all. And, you know, it was only the one really at Daka right at the start that that did cause him any issues. So that is my worry now. And I think that's why Enzo was so down after the game, and also thinking about what he needs to do to fix it and to try and to turn around their fortunes. So I think he's got a lot to think about ahead of the Sunderland game. I think you're going to see some changes.
Yeah, no, a massive weekend. We mentioned the three league defeats in a row. We also now then head into to three away games in a row in the league.
Might
now
suit them. I think that'll suit them though. I think there's just nervousness around the King Power at the moment. It's, you know, because they have seen that lead start to be inched away a little bit. I think going on the road, they have performed quite well on the road. And plus as well, teams come out at them a little bit more, offer them a little bit more room away from home because the emphasis is on them. So I can't see any side sitting as deep as QPR did at the weekend and trying to soak up pressure for 90 minutes on their own patch because their fans won't have it. So it might suit them.
Yeah, no, and I don't completely disagree. I think the difference now, Jordan, is perhaps that beforehand they had that big cushion and now we don't. So kind of psychologically and mentally, the way that kind of impacts on the team and on how they play and the manager and his decisions, it does make things slightly different. Now, you are notorious for being the most positive Leicester fan on the planet. I think everyone is panicking somewhat. And, you know, even myself, I'm looking at that league table and thinking, Christ, how has that happened? You know, I was looking at, you know, thinking 15 to 20 points was, in terms of a cushion, that didn't look like it was going to be closed at any time soon. It doesn't feel like we've played that badly. And I think Rob is right in lots of the sense that I'm sure you'll kind of touch on this as well. You look at the games in isolation. I don't think we played particularly poorly in any of them. And you could make good cases to say we should have won all of them. But the reality is we haven't. And now they're proper breathing down our necks.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything Rob said. And I said it after the Leeds game in our chat. The only team I think that can beat us to the title or at the minute promotion is ourselves. And, you know, no one would have seen us losing three games on the bounce. And as Rob said, if you look at them all in isolation, I don't think we played particularly badly in any of them. And I don't think we played badly on Saturday. But what did kind of irk me a little bit is that Leeds gave us a sniff by dropping 2 points against 10 men. And then there wasn't, for me, any... We didn't start with a particular tempo. And in a lot of our games, it seems like the first goal is quite crucial as well. And as soon as QPR get the first goal, I mean, they've been on a really good run, but you know, they were camped out in their own half for the whole game. So as soon as they've got something to defend, and then obviously the second in the second half, and it's like, this is going to be difficult. But, you know, trying to be positive, it seems a bit of a crisis that we're five clear with 11 left. Again, you would have taken that in August. And, you know, for these players in the squad that have got bags of experience, Cody, Albrighton, Vardy, I'd like to see them involved tomorrow night because it is a time for calm heads. You know, Enzo's not been in this position. I think Harry said last week, he's not managed 50 league games. So he's learning as well. There's a lot of criticism around there's no plan B. Well, there's not going to be if you're winning most of your games every week because you're never in a situation to try it. And I think there's a combination of things that have happened that have led to us losing these games. The first is we've not finished our chances. I mean, after 75 minutes at Leeds, we were 12 points clear and we were pretty much home and hosed for the season. And then the next thing, the gap's down to 6. And that was our own fault. You can't miss chances at any level. I don't think we had particularly great chances on Saturday, but certainly against Middlesbrough and Leeds, we missed chances. The second thing I think is injuries have come back to bite us at the wrong time. I'm not going to comment on Pratt because it's entirely predictable what was going to happen. Rick's put the curse on Ricardo, who's now seems to be out for a month after being available and probably one of our best players all season. obviously Vestergaard was missing at the weekend. So there's three players in your spine. Add to that, I think a couple of players have been slightly off it. Justin, KDH and Mavididi were not at the races on Saturday. And I think, as I said, after Middlesbrough, you can probably get away with one or two not being at the races. But when it's a collective, you're going to get punished. And I think the final thing is we're just having some really rotten luck. I mean, the Daka goal is a goal at Elland Road. It's 2-0, game over. And I've only seen it once. I think it was a penalty on Mavididi in the last minute. It looked a foul. The only thing was he went down in instalments. He seemed to take one or two touches and then realised he'd been clipped and then went to ground. And it looked like the players were a bit annoyed at that full time, but that was kind of clutching at straws. But I think those four things, we've just not had a huge amount of luck. I mean, you look at Ipswich and even the Leeds goals, I can't remember us scoring a goal like that. If we score, it has to be perfect, has to be precision. Whereas Ipswich are shanking up for 20 yards, it's taking five deflections, hitting someone's hand, he gets sent off, penalty goal. I mean, it's just both ridiculous goals that they're scoring. But look, I think these things can't carry on. I don't know if you watched the Manchester derby yesterday, but as soon as United scored, you knew what was going to happen. And I'm not saying we're Man City, they absolutely peppered them. And you just think this can't carry on. They can't keep missing chances. And I think that's the same with us. We just create too many chances not to start winning games. And, you know, the last two home defeats, I think they've been out there four times and scored four. I just can't see that continuing. The law of averages tells you that the amount of chances we have, we're going to start winning games. And as Rob says, I think it will suit us playing away because I think those three teams will have to come and attack and you won't have the negativity that is our home support at the minute.
Yeah. Okay then, Rick. Afternoon.
I mean, there's been plenty of realism dealt there by Rob and Jord. And I think there needs to be more because on paper, we are in a good position. And, you know, 35 games ago, whatever it is, at the start of the season, we'd take the position we're in. But that doesn't really tell the story that we're in now. Unfortunately, we are hitting bad form or poor form at the wrong time. You know, Leeds and Ipswich and Southampton, their poor form has been scattered across the season, but they've had patches of similar runs of games where they've lost or not won. But they've had time to correct that. We've got to be very careful. We don't really have the time. If we carry this on much longer, we could well be relying on others to do us a favour, which is astonishing given the points total that we had, the lead we had. I'm more concerned as well about Enzo's lack of experience. We can't do anything about that. He can't do anything about that. It's a learning curve for him. But I want to see that he is humble enough and he can swallow his pride a little bit to do so. That he's got strong philosophies, of course, and he's going to believe in himself. But I thought Saturday was really concerning in the way that we had no answer to a QPR side that were in good form. They were averaging 2 points the last seven games. They were not going to be easy. But as Rob and Jordan have said, they had two shots and scored twice, but it was easy for them. What did we do to actually create a chance other than Nelson's goal from Dewsbury's free kick? There was nothing. There was no variation to our play. And that really bothers me. The Leeds performance was fantastic. And, you know, we were all just frustrated and gutted that we managed to not see out even a draw there. And the Middlesbrough game, gone 2-0 down, not great, but we had enough within us, having already created a couple of chances to at least get a draw, if not win. So you can get behind those sorts of results and say, no, that won't continue. But Saturday's was a real worry for me. And I don't think that level of performance will continue. It was a one-off in isolation. It needs to be. But when you add that to forgetting how to win against Leeds and Middlesbrough, you start to then panic a bit. You do. And with the lack of experience, with the lack of leadership out there, you know, it was a big opportunity for him to put faith in Cody on Saturday. And he didn't do. Brave call giving it to Nelson. And, you know, I'm a massive advocate of young players in the academy. I've been calling for Rodgers to do more of that in recent years. So I can't criticise him too much on that because the philosophy behind that is amazing. But there's sort of a time and a place when you need your leaders out there. You know, with Ricciardo being injured, who's probably the constant leader at the minute with experience, and Vardy was only back on the bench. I feel like we needed Cody out there, whether that was alongside Nelson or instead of. But I hope Cody will start tomorrow, that he has learned his lesson, because our defending against Bournemouth was really impressive. Last-ditch tackles and throwing the bodies on the line. Obviously, didn't necessarily need that so much against QPR with only two shots, but it's just that, it's just the feeling you get given when you know what the manager's trying to do. Being away from home for the next X amount of games is a positive, of course. But look, we wouldn't be surprised if we threw this away, and I think that's the saddest thing, isn't it? It is a different environment era to what we saw under Rodgers, to what we've seen in the past, but you can't help but feel we've been here before. We're the most ridiculous professional football club there's ever been. Our successes and failures are not decided by logic, or I don't think they're decided on the pitch. I think there's some... I'm not a religious man, as you well know with my rant last season, but it feels like there's a higher power that decides what we do, because we're just nuts. We're off a pickle. And I feel like that's what's happening here. So we just got to get on with it, haven't we? And hope. But, you know, as you've pointed to, that article that's come out today about our financial position as well, precarious, and you can't help but feel if we do balls this up, I really fear for us, because you know relegation and not getting straight back up is bad enough, but yeah, we'll touch on that, I'm sure.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's interesting, Rick, you said about this ability that this football club has, and I suppose in some ways it's a little bit of an elephant in the room, because we kind of felt that now that you know Rodgers was gone, because let's not beat around the bush, and you know, that was something that's followed Brendan around in his career, this incredible ability to balls up almost impossible situations. We kind of felt that maybe that had gone with Brendan, and I mean, dare I say it, and is that still kind of looming within the group? I can't remember who it was. I think it was either Jose or Antonio Conte talking about Spurs, and what he says, like, it's in our DNA, it's in the club's DNA. And again, I'm very hesitant to kind of label this team with that same tag as what the Rodgers group had. But should we be concerned? Because this has been something this club has done quite incredibly over the last few years, whether it be for fourth place, mm-hmm. and then obviously for survival last year. We just have this ability, don't we? And you know, has any team in history been, 17, 18 points clear in the Championship and then not gone up automatically? You know, it's mad I'm asking these questions, but the reality is it's 3 points now, so we've got to talk about it.
Well, absolutely. And what is remarkable is it's happened in 3 games. So you've seen that change of fortune in just 3 games. That's how quickly it can turn against you. Momentum is so important. But Rick's right about this football club. I mean, I've been covering them 15 years now. I don't think I've ever seen a boring season where there hasn't been some dramatic incident or turnaround in fortunes. I mean, I interviewed Mike Stowell when he left the club, and he said, look, we never did a mundane season where we were just sat here, we were either fighting for our lives or fighting for a title or some silverware. And they're in another fight now. And it might actually, I'm hoping, I'm a bit like Jordan, I'm a positive person. I'm hoping it's going to act to dispel any complacency, because they were so far ahead. People were talking about breaking Reading's record and the most wins they could possibly have. People were sending me little gifts and emojis, you know, we're going to piss the league and all this lot. And it suddenly, just in 3 games, that mood has changed, and that expectation suddenly has been replaced. That might be a benefit if they can use that to their advantage. I like to think there's enough characters in that dressing room that they can see what's happening now and what's needed. And I mentioned Connor in my article this morning because he's been there with Wolves. They had a similar wobble around a similar time of year in 2018. And then they recovered and they kicked on again. And that's what this Leicester side's got to do. And with Connor as well, you got to look at his last 2 starts. They've kept clean sheets, and they haven't kept many clean sheets this season. They always give the opposition a little bit of encouragement in games. So if they can just get back to basic defending. I mean, I know the principles why Enzo prefers Ben. I mean, Ben is the future. Ben is definitely the future. He could play left, right, great on the ball. When he's got his confidence going, you'll see him playing forwards more. But what he picks him because, especially at home, there's so much space behind the back line because they push so far up and teams defend so deep. There's 50, 60 yards in behind. And, you know, when you've got a Yannick Vestergaard in there, you can't have then another one that struggles with pace. I mean, you got Boutfars, James Justin, they can do that. So either side of Connor, they can cover for Connor because he hasn't got that great pace. But when he wants to move Boutfars in the middle because he likes his distribution, he's got to have pace either side. And that's why Ben's been getting in ahead of Connor. But I think now it's the time for that, especially away from home where you're not going to be pressing into the final third of the pitch for 90 minutes like they have been. That's why I think he might look at that. But yeah, it's Leicester though, isn't it? You know, it's going to be a nerve-wracking end. Doesn't matter. It was never going to be that easy that they were going to march all the way to the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, I was honestly convinced we were going to go get that record from Reading. But Rob, just quickly on that one, on the defence, because I've been a little bit intrigued by this. And we actually had this debate in the group chat after the game. Because I see obviously lots of people saying, oh, should Cody have played in that game? You know, or we missed Yannick Vestergaard. If I'm honest, I mean, I don't think we have missed either. Personally, I don't think defensively it's been an issue. Now, look, I completely understand what you guys are saying about the need for experience, you know, and what Connor brings to the team. I think he's actually been incredibly unfortunate not to have played more all season, to be honest. But, you know, you reeled off the stats at the start of the game in terms of the shots that other teams have had, the possession, etc. For me, it's been an inability to break teams down. And that's not Connor Cody. He's not going to come in and do that. You know, Yannick Vestergaard not playing at the weekend isn't going to do that. Defensively, for me, we've looked fine. And I'm happy for Ben to keep getting a run of games because, as you said, he is the future. You know, and if we can't get promoted with, you know, a 17-point lead and Ben Nelson playing at centre-half, then we don't deserve to get promoted. For me, I'm looking at that squad, and I've mentioned this numerous times, of Enzo and his lack of trust within the squad. And it's strange because at some point earlier in the season, he was making loads of changes. You know, when in certain games, Harry Suter was coming in. You know, he was rotating the strikers, the wingers, you know, McAteer, Marcel. But now he's not doing it. And even at the weekend, we're not breaking down QPR. We weren't. We weren't creating, you know, clear-cut opportunities. But Mark Albrighton sat there on the bench. Wanya Marcel was sat there on the bench. He makes a change. And what was the change? He brought off the one player he'd already brought on. In Eunice. And for me, and again, I said this at the time, and it's not a situation of saying, oh, I told you so, but it just felt concerned at the time that you need a happy squad to be successful in a league like this, because there is going to be a need for rotation. There is going to be injury suspensions. And it just feels that now is the time that he needs these players. You're all Brightons, etc. But they've kind of been frozen out to a degree, or they're not particularly match fit. I just don't think he trusts them, and the players know that. So it's just a little bit concerning that it wasn't working for Mavididi at the weekend, and he's got two wingers sat there on the bench, and he just didn't make that change. And I don't know, Rob, I'm more concerned about our lack of midfield options and wingers and the form in those areas, as opposed to talking about, you know, whether Ben Nelson should be dropping out for Connor Cody.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I mentioned Connor is just simply because of that experience and that knowledge and the influence he can have on people around him. You're right, though. I mean, but having said that, they've faced eight opportunities on their own goal in the last two home games and conceded four. So there's some issue there. There is a fragility a little bit at the back and the manner of the goals they have conceded. But in terms of the final three, it's not so much he doesn't trust. I don't think. I mean, I'm just going to offer some mitigation. I don't think it's the fact that he doesn't trust Mark Albrighton. He just likes his two wingers, and he's said this numerous times. He likes them to get them into one-on-one situations and ask them to attack the fullback, get into the box for the pullbacks. Mark obviously doesn't do that. Jamie loves Mark, by the way, because Mark gets the ball, shifts it first touch out of his feet and whips it in. And we saw that with a goal earlier this season. So, you know what you're going to get with Mark. And he is a weapon that you can use at certain times of the season. But I think just the way Enzo's so invested in his style of play, his idea, as he calls it. He's so invested in it that it needs two wingers that are going to take on the fullback and get the ball in. Now, Mavididi's been woefully out of form, and I put that to him after the game at the weekend, and he agreed. You know, it was a bad day at the office for Steffi, but he didn't have too many options, he thought, to change it. Now, he's got one year. One year played all right against Bournemouth. He's been in and out of the side this season. But I think he was also making a point about the lack of signings in the January transfer window, because now he's down to the last three central midfielders in Winks, Dewsbury, Hoare and Eunice, who's not really a number eight, is he? I mean, he's playing him as an eight, but that's not what he's done previously in his career. So that has got to be a worry. That creativity, where's that going to come from in that from that midfield three? When Dewsbury Hoare was a little bit off it, Harry Winks isn't that type of creative player. You know, he's a conduit player. You need somebody else either side. Wilf should be back, hopefully, in the next week or two, which would be a major boost for them, because he's been, like Vestergaard, he's been transformed this season. But that's why you wanted to bring in Sensei or an alternative in the January window, and they couldn't do it because of the financial reasons that we're probably going to discuss in a bit.
Yeah. Jordan, pick up from there. Thoughts on the squad and the players not playing and why it's maybe not quite going wrong.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything that's been said. The Cody one interests me as opposed to Nelson. I would, we're saying it's either Cody or Nelson. It could be Cody and Nelson, but then you obviously take Fez out. I would play Cody tomorrow. And I know Rick mentioned it the other week about Wolves' little collapse, and then they recovered. If you've been there and done it, and Cody's, you know, I saw a clip the other day from the Euros final. Cody's in the squad. Obviously, they lost that game, but it's a monumental game, and he's got so much experience. These players, when they play, and even, you know, like you say, Jake, he's not been in the team as much as I thought he would be. That presence around the dressing room at training, it really is invaluable. The same for a player like Winks, who's obviously a bit younger. And I noticed on Saturday, Winks was straight down the tunnel. He was absolutely fuming. He's probably used to it at Spurs, all those times they've bottled it. But, you know, I'd put Cody in there. And one thing for me that is really frustrating me at the minute, which I had a little bit rant about it last week, is the negativity. And, you know, this club is defied by logic. And maybe I look at it too logically. But, you know, people going about, we bottled fourth twice. Well, we didn't bottle anything because we shouldn't have been anywhere near there. And we won the FA Cup for the first time in our history. That's not bottling it. You know, last season it was, oh, we're going to go down. This season it's, oh, we're going to bottle top two. And that negativity spreads like wildfire. And Brendan couldn't turn it around. You know, Dean Smith went in there, couldn't turn it around. And Enzo has. So why are we still being negative? You know, you won't see players like Cody and Winks going into training being negative. They'll be picking the team, picking all the young lads up and being positive. And, you know, on Saturday, that, you know, to me, we deserve everything we get if we do miss the top two, because 75 minutes gone. Yes, we weren't playing well, but the place is silent. The ground was silent. Everyone was leaving at 75, 80 minutes again. That transforms onto the pitch, that negativity. It gets to the players, and especially when they're young kids. And people like Cody and Albrighton, I can understand why Albrighton isn't starting, but at least for 10 minutes at the end, just get them to rain crosses into Tom Cannon.
Yeah, try something different.
Try something different. But that kind of negativity doesn't get to players like that. And when it, you know, when it becomes crunch time, which it is rapidly becoming now, you need players like that. And I would start Cody tomorrow. I'd start Vardy tomorrow. And they'd probably be the only two changes I'd make, to be honest. And like Rob said, it doesn't surprise me that Enzo's kind of, if he is making a point, that we haven't got the strength in depth, because I feel like managers have done that in the past, and you see it elsewhere, that if managers are committed to their philosophy and they're not being given what they want from the board, then that's what they'll do. And as I said earlier, I think, you know, we've got players out of form, and we've picked up injuries at the wrong time. And that's been something that this football club has had to deal with for years, is these injuries. I don't think we've got a huge amount of options, to be honest, going to Sunderland tomorrow, but those two I would bring in. And the only other thing I would say on Saturday, in terms of a plan B, if you like, is I'd have swapped Mavididi and Fatu round after about an hour, 70 minutes. Just if that's the way you commit to playing with one up front, fine, but just switch them around to give the fullback something else to think about, because they're very different wingers. You know, Mavadidi is a lot trickier and he likes to sort of hold up the ball, whereas, you know, it felt to me like it was give the ball to Abdul. See if he can cut inside and shoot. That basically seemed it to me. And then when Cannon came on, I thought, all right, we're just going to load it in the box now for 10 minutes. But we didn't do that. He was just missing in that position. But like I say, Enzo's, you know, Rob says there he's committed to his idea and that's fine. And he's not been, you know, he's not been a manager and he's not been in this position for long. So he's learning on the job as well. And I don't think he's got too many options for tomorrow. So for me, it'd be go back to what you know. It'd be Cody and Vardy. And just one more thing, actually, Rob mentioned it there. But, you know, look at the Middlesbrough and the QPR goals. We're on the halfway line. We're so square. Both goals were almost identical, their openers. Whereas at Bournemouth, we had Yannick and Cody. And I appreciate that we're away against the Premier League team. We were 10, 15 yards deeper. And it really suited those two because you can't catch their, you know, their pace. But they're experienced enough to cover the positions and know how to keep a clean sheet. And, you know, it might be that we have to do that in the next couple of games, drop a little bit deeper rather than, you know, be on the halfway line and 1-2 passes through your back four and they're in on goal.
Rick, after the deadline day closed and we didn't manage to get sent in, we did a podcast, ended an episode and kind of looked at that and why perhaps we were particularly frustrated and what it could mean for the season. And I remember, you know, we were saying constantly at the time, you know, let's not panic too much. You know, let's not kind of go overboard here. You know, we've still got a very nice cushion and this squad should have more than enough to get promoted. And I still stand by that. You know, and I know we're talking about, you know, injuries and suspensions. I still look at that squad and think that with the options that Enzo has, he's got plenty. And I touched on the fact that all Brighton and Marcel, Wanny Marcel didn't come on at the weekend. You know, how many other Championship teams, you know, have got a bench filled with players that aren't kind of from the academy or loan players? He's got all the players really that he should need, even with the current players out injured. So I don't really think there's too much of an excuse when he's saying, oh, I haven't got the options, because I think he has. And I said this at the time, we shouldn't need to sign Stefano Sensi from Inter Milan to get promoted from the Championship. You know, that shouldn't be, you know, a manager's answer to getting promoted. He's got the players there to do it. So I think he needs to look at himself a little bit instead of, I don't know if he is complaining or moaning or sulking. I'm really not too sure. But, and then kind of just thrown into that as well, you know, the lack of a Wilfred Ndidi, who obviously hasn't been there. And, you know, our record without him is pretty dire. I know kind of a few things to go out there, but yeah, it just kind of remind me of a conversation we had post deadline day. I think he should be fine. I think he's got more than enough players there, but also equally, you know, Ndidi coming back into this group, if that could be nice and sharpish, we'll give him all a big boost, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a timely boost, especially with Ricardo out, who's probably the other indispensable player of this team, experience and ability at this level. I mean, if Wilf comes back in and picks up the mantle of 2.5 points per game that he's averaged every game he's played, then we're up. So let's hope he can do that, because the form without him's something like 1.5 points a game, which probably isn't going to be enough. It's a curious one around the squad, because yes, we theoretically had enough on February the 1st with what how many points were we clear then that you wouldn't anticipate that we would be in this position. But how many times have we looked back when we failed to recruit in January and we've said, why have they done that? We, you know, we were 13 points clear in the top four in 2019-20, and we didn't bring anyone in. The season after, we didn't bring anyone in. It's hard to say, no, it's fine. It's not on them. When you're looking at Southampton, who have wobbled, but, you know, David Brooks has come in, he's scoring and assisting. Connor Roberts scored the goal against us. He got an assist for the goal that they got scabbed a point against Huddersfield. And then Ipswich, Kiefer Moore scoring goals. Sarmiento, who was recalled and then loaned to them. So it's, I agree with you on one hand, but on the other hand, what, you know, Enzo evidently wanted to play. And it wasn't even that we kept the same squad, Jake. We lost Cassidy. So, and at that point, Ndidi was also ruled out for what we thought was going to be 3 months. So I just think, once again, yes, we're inhibited financially, but they tried to do the Sensi deal very late on. What on earth they were doing? I've heard rumours and all sorts, but just completely typifies our Januaries in as far back as January's been an actual transfer window, as opposed to when it used to run until mid-March. But you look at the midfield and you look at Enzo's lack of trust and all of that culminates. And yes, on paper, we might have enough, but we go and throw in that performance against Bournemouth, where Marcel had his best game of the season for us, because he'd not done very well in the cup games against Birmingham and Millwall particularly. Yunus had a great game. I know he came on. Albrighton did well. There was a few others. If you can do that in the midst of already losing two on the spin in the league, how's he not then thinking that they're worth a try when you're 2-0 down again at home yet against QPR? I mean, Mavididi was very good against Leeds, but his finishing was abysmal. But there was enough in that performance that you think, yeah, you know, you'd keep him on. And yet we took him off, put McAteer on, and it fell apart. He kept Mavididi on Saturday for whatever reason. After Marcel was there, he'd played, I know he played 120 minutes, so maybe that had something to do with it. I'm going over and over. He's under the microscope, Maresca is now, on every decision he does. And when things are going wrong, it's easy to then say, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. He's got to learn quickly. He's got to trust his squad. Albrighton should have come on, whack the ball into Vardy and Cannon when he was in, make it, or even stick Suter up there. You know my thoughts on getting a big Harry up there. Hark back to Steve Walsh being up there back in the 90s. But, yeah, I know he's not going to move too far away from his principles, but the principles allow him to give some of these players a chance in the cup. You know, you could argue he's actively tried to throw the FA Cup this season by the changes that he's made. He's not. He's thought, well, I'll give these players a chance. If we don't go through, hey-ho, we'll concentrate on our bread and butter. If we do go through, those players hopefully have succeeded and proved that they're worth using in the league. And yet he's not then going to use them. So, yeah, you're right. There's not a lot of sympathy out there for Enzo, really, with the squad. But we haven't got many central midfield options right now. And you can't help but feel like the club have not gone out their way to help him. So what do we do? George's right. There's probably only a couple of changes we make tomorrow. but what those are, I think Vardy has to come in. And Connor, I would bring him.
Yeah, right. Well, we'll touch on the finances and the potential impact of not getting promoted or even getting promoted with Rob in a couple of moments' time. But Jordan, something that people have been asking us on social media to talk about is the style of play and the no plan B. I think it's an interesting one. And look, you know, clearly I haven't got the football brain, skill and intellect of Enzo Maresca, and I'd never profess to kind of really truly understanding. I know we talk about it and like to think we do. But obviously these guys, they know more about football than us. Of course they do. You know, that's stating the bleeding obvious. But I find it strange when people say, oh, we're just passing teams to death. And again, I often find myself repeating myself. But the reality is that the group of players that we have are significantly better than the opposition. So whether it's a plan B or a different way of playing, the reality is that Leicester are always going to have more of the ball. Unless, I mean, are you literally saying we'll just give them the ball? And it's a very difficult and strange thing to suggest. I'm not really too sure what people, when they're saying, what's the plan B? It's either giving them the ball and somehow counter-attacking the team, but QPR aren't going to be good enough to keep the ball for long enough. We can't then go direct because we've not got the players to do that. So I just feel like it's this phrase sometimes that people like to band around and say, oh, there's no plan B, or you're passing teams to death, or it's just sideways, it's ticky-tacky nonsense. That's the only, really, the way that this team can play, because they're going to have the ball more because they've got better footballers, you know, and it's just finding a way to break teams down. And for me, that was through changing up slightly with the personnel that they had on the bench, not with the style of play. I don't know. I get frustrated when people are kind of shouting that from the stands or wherever they're watching the game.
Yeah, I get frustrated with a lot of things that are shouted from the stands if people are still left in the ground. But Rick's obviously stuck in the 90s because he wants a centre-half up front and wants us to load it up there. What I don't get is, do these people not watch football outside of Leicester City? Because it's the only way to play. You know, obviously we won the league by a complete miracle playing with 20% possession, but maybe Atletico Madrid are the only team who've ever sustained that longer than a couple of seasons. It's just impossible. The best teams all play this way. You need to control the ball, minimize mistakes, and grind the opposition down. And, you know, Man City are the best in the world at it. I don't know if anyone watched Leeds against Huddersfield, but they play the same way. I've not seen, there's a bit more chaos with Southampton and Ipswich, I think, but again, Southampton try and play that way. And Enzo thinks that's the way we should play, and we've got the players to play it. Well, I think that's it is the only option for us. What's the point? We can't necessarily, like you say, Jake, just say, oh, you have the ball and we'll sit off, because it's just not possible. And then the only thing I would say is with the plan B is, the plan B is just to load it in the box, isn't it? That's what everyone expects the plan B to be.
It's just go direct, isn't it?
Yeah.
But we can't go direct, you know?
I think that's what people want us to do, because that's the football they're used to seeing when they grow up. But like I say, Enzo's not been in a position enough this season. His plan A's been so good every week, pretty much. And even in the games we've lost, the only one I would say is Coventry, because we had 10 men. Even against QPR, we didn't force Begovic into too many saves. But if you look on paper, there was enough in that for us to not lose the game. And there's no team that's outplayed us at all this season. At Leeds, I mean, I wasn't on the pod after Leeds. I didn't want to say it, but if they were the closest team to us, I was thinking, we've got nothing to worry about. We absolutely peppered them in the second half. And the most diehard Leeds fan couldn't argue they shouldn't have been 3 or 4 down. As it is, they've gained a point on us on Saturday and they're only 5 behind. But our plan A has worked more often than not, which has put us in this position. And we are still in a good position. We're in the box seat. It's still in our hands. We can still get the record, as ridiculous as it sounds, because we've lost 3 in a row. But
yeah, I think we need to hold that talk for now.
Obviously. But I said we'd win 10 out of 14. Well, now there's 11 because we've lost the last 3. But we can still go and win 10 playing this way. I don't see any reason that we don't do that, even with the injuries that we've got, because we create so many chances that the law of averages must suggest that you will score more than the opposition. So, yeah, and the plan B is obviously surfaced because we've lost the last few games. So that's where it comes from.
No, the bloke who sits in front of me said a few weeks ago, oh, you guys, I reckon we can only really afford to lose 3 games. 3 games later, it's like, right, there's our 3 gone. So, and you also talk about the fact that, you know, law of averages, create more chances, you score more. I mean, I'm not sure if you've seen the stats that are flying around, but Leicester have missed more big chances and comfortably more than any other club in the Championship. So, yeah, we are creating, but the issue in terms of converting them, I'm not quite sure what it is, because you would have thought that the strikers and the players that we've got shouldn't really have any issue converting those big chances, whether it's just complacency because they're getting more chances than everyone else. So, you know, if you're in that situation, I often think this, you know, when we talk about, you know, when you're playing a poorer team and you say you drop down to their level, and I was saying, well, look, you know, if you're playing in the Premier League, you're just slightly a bit more switched on, you know, and if you're playing in the Championship and you know you're going to get 3 or 4 chances in a game, you're probably not going to take those 3 or 4 chances like you would if you know subconsciously you're probably only going to get 1 chance in that game. And that's what we're coming up against when we're playing QPR. You know, they think we're only going to get 1 chance here. And I know that's a real strange thing, because you obviously don't think like that when you're playing. But I do think subconsciously maybe that's a reason why we miss more bigger chances than everyone else. Rob, I want to talk about finances.
Yeah.
I would like to think you know more than us guys sat here and listening, or certainly have read and heard more than us. And another article today talking about the potential issues for us, irrespective in some ways of whether we get promoted or not this year. But it kind of goes without saying, if we weren't to secure promotion back straight away, it feels personally like it would be catastrophic for things financially. Of course, you know, deadline day, we didn't do that deal because of money. They tried to do the deal.
It wasn't about money. It was just a breakdown of the negotiations of how the deal was going to be structured. They finally decided, having indicated all the way through the window that they weren't going to do any business. And Enzo said he wanted a winger, he wanted an attacking midfielder at least, and another left-sided defender. And then he turned around at the press conference and said, "I've been told now that can't happen." But then suddenly they reignited that Sensi deal on the final day and were trying to get it through before the end. And then they pulled the plug at the end because the legal side of it was getting so unwieldy that they thought they were going to get another Adrian Silva situation on their hands. So that's why it died a death with still an hour or so to go. But they suddenly decided, you're right, promotion is so important that if this player could make the difference, they decided to do it at the end. But it was just a little bit too late to get it all ironed out properly, the structure of it. But if they don't get up, they've carried a Premier League squad on Premier League budget into the Championship. And when relegation was confirmed, Susan Wynne sent an email around to all the staff, and it basically said it's going to be business as usual. So they haven't made any cuts anywhere else at the club. All the cuts have come in the playing side. So the players all are on a lot less now a week. Obviously, you sold your key men. So many of them, natural wastage with their contracts running out, like Tielemans leaving the club. And that's where they thought they could make the cuts. And they did reinvest it, obviously, because they still need to make some signings. They did reinvest some money into it. But they know that they need to get back straight away. Otherwise, you know, your parachute payments that you can rely on first couple of years, they're reducing over time. The seventh biggest budget in the Premier League. You know, that's a huge amount of money they're carrying. I always say something about the relegation. It's not normally when a team suffers and gets relegated, it's because of a lack of ambition. With Leicester, it's because they were over-ambitious, trying to close the gap. They're obsessed with closing the gap to the big six and qualifying for Europe on a regular basis. It's always mentioned in the annual accounts about qualifying for European football. They really were stretching. But the problem is trying to track down the big six. They're a moving target. They're getting stronger, more powerful. Their revenue streams are global. I mean, Manchester United and Liverpool. I mean, Jordan will tell you this more than me in terms of their global reach, their audience. It's enormous. They are global football teams that just happen to be in England. So trying to chase them down on Leicester's revenue, that was always going to be tough enough. But then when COVID hit at just the wrong time, just when they were backing Brendan, because they spent a lot of money under Brendan, not just on transfer fees, but all the players' contracts were dramatically improved. That expenditure under Brendan to pursue that European dream, suddenly they got lumbered with that when COVID hit. And obviously we all know, you know, what the main part of the business of King Power is. Tourism, you know, they're not just a duty free shop in Bangkok airport. You know, they got hotels and they've got so many things that are linked to the tourism industry. So they took a massive, massive hit as well. So, you know, you couldn't draw on the bank of dad anymore for a while, although they have put some facilities available. That's why I kept going to the Aussie bank as well for some facilities there. So it did start to look very, very dire. And I was surprised it's taken this long for somebody to try and point the finger at Leicester now with the financial fair play or sustainability regulations that have come in about now, profit and sustainability, because suddenly everybody's nervous. What happened with Everton? Suddenly everybody realised that they've got to take this seriously now. These rules will have consequences. They are teeth in these rules. But what happened now is everybody's panicking and they're pointing at others as well. So it was inevitable that somebody was going to point a finger at Leicester at some stage. Their accounts haven't come out yet for the next year. I don't think they're going to make for great reading when you consider they've got, you know, but the Fofana deal might help the situation. What will also help them in terms of mitigation, because they're going to be over the amount they're allowed, the 105 million over 3 years, I'm pretty certain. But what they can do is in mitigation, is say, look, we did pump the brakes. We didn't sign anybody in that window until right at the end when we sold for Fofana and we brought Fars in. We've tried to cut the wage bill, you know, and it's cost us relegation because we've tried to adhere to these regulations, whereas other clubs sort of just disregarded them, carried on despite warnings. I'm talking about Everton. I mean, the Premier League warned them they were going to go over at this threshold, and they still carried on signing players. Leicester didn't. So, and again, in the this January transfer window, they pumped the brakes again because they thought, look, we're going to be in trouble here. We're going to, and obviously, everybody knew what was going on with Everton. They probably had a whisper about Forest. So they pumped the brakes, and then they were going to do the Sensi deal, trying to structure it in a way that you know, it wasn't going to cost them too much money and push them over the threshold. But there's still that question mark about will they be over the threshold? Will their mitigation be enough? But I don't think that. Overly worried right now. I mean, obviously, if they get up, then yeah, that's a huge boost to their finances once again. But yeah, promotion is so important to absolutely so it's vital. But they have tried to conform to the FFP.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of questions then from me. I'm sure the boys will have a couple to ask as well. But obviously, as you mentioned there with the Everton case, you know, they complied in the fact that they worked with the Premier League once they found out they were guilty. And they thought that that would perhaps help them in terms of the punishment they received. Now, actually may well have done. And you know, you're saying here that Leicester potentially have also broken these rules. But
potentially, I mean, if the 105 million threshold, I mean, if you think they probably over the last two, they're probably up to 100 million over the last two accounts in terms of losses. So, you know, you only need another one that's going to just tip you over the edge, because obviously they take it on the 3-year ratio. So.
But the fact that we have then stopped spending or certainly cut back significantly, the Premier League or the FA may just look at that as, well, that's irrelevant. You've still broke the rules and we still get slapped with the same punishment and fine as someone who's gone and continued to spend like Everton. If you've either broken the rules or you haven't. So, you know, whether we've stopped spending or not, that we can still be looked at in the exact same way. And potentially, right, the way I'm interpreting this is could still get hit with a 10 or a 6-point deduction.
Well, yeah, there is now a precedent that's been set for these issues. I mean, you can be creative with your accounting as well in terms of what you spend that money on, what you can attribute that loss to. Obviously, women's football, your infrastructure. So the training ground was never factored into FFP. Those sort of things you can write off effectively. It is purely down the player budget, your expenditure on the playing side of the club that will be scrutinised. So it's whether they, and I don't know because I haven't seen the accounts, they won't be out for a month or so. It's whether they can find mitigation in there. So time will tell ultimately, but I think there is also a little bit of gamesmanship going on, you know, pointing the finger, deflection going on around the game at the moment, people pointing the finger at various other clubs, you know, okay, we got done, but what about them? What about them? What about them? So I think there's a bit of that going on as well now.
And one more for me, for I'm sure the boys will have then some questions. And it's looking ahead, and I probably shouldn't be doing this right now after losing three games in a row. But maybe just then a stark reminder of if we get promoted, you know, the glitz and the glamour and the money that comes with the Premier League, Leicester aren't going to be splashing £30 million on footballers because of this situation. If they go up, they're going to have to be creative. You just use that word. And very successful in discovering some players, aren't they?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, they've invested a lot in the youth. So I think obviously the development of Ben Nelson, they'll go back to the selling one key asset every summer. At the moment, you'd say that biggest asset is Keenan Dewsbury Hall at the moment as it stands. There will be some natural wastage as well. There's players going out of contract. Enzo says they won't discuss new contracts with anybody until they know what division they're in. I know there's been speculation that they're preparing to talk to Yannick, but there's a big decision to make about whether you want to take Yannick back in the Premier League, because it didn't really work in the Premier League before, although this is a completely different style of play. And it does seem to suit him much more than Brendan's style did. But obviously, you know, Vardy, Wilfred Ndidi, Kelechi Iheanacho, Mark Albrighton. I mean, I think Mark will move on. Whether they're the fans or there's the club think there's another year in Jamie because of his talisman status. So there's a lot of decisions to be made, and there will be naturally a reshuffling of the pack again, regardless of whether they get promoted or not. Obviously, if they get promoted, then that they're shopping in a different supermarket. But if they're staying in the Championship, they're going to be in trouble in terms of the changes they make and where they can get these players to come in.
Rick?
Yeah, I suppose first question is going back to, well, the 22-23 accounts, which, yes, nobody really knows about our accounts yet, but the club will have known largely where we were at, pretty much bang on when the accounting period ended. And I found it very interesting that the Madison deal went through, I believe, just before the accounting period ended, at the end of June. It is simply staggering if we do fail FFP or PSR, whatever we call it now, for the three-year cycle included 22-23, because we sold Fofana and only spent 15 million of that. And you'll put that across 5 years of Valtfassi's contract. So, you know, 3 million a year. Yes, we spent some in the January window, but again, we would spread that over. And then we got 40 million for Madison, which you'd take off a little bit that we owed Norwich in sell on. But you'd hope that the reason why we pushed through that Madison deal was to comply. I was always under the impression that if we were going to run close to financial breaches, it would be 23-24, the year we're in now. And I still think that won't make for nice reading if we have also failed 22-23. But yeah, not a lot's been said about that Madison deal. I wonder if is that factually correct, or would that have not been counted in 22-23? Do you know?
I'm not sure if that's been included. And we will see when that is published, whether that was in time to be included. I know they put back the threshold at which they submit them from March, I think it was, back to June. So they have put it back. Now they're now conforming more with many of their rivals in terms of when they do those accounts and finalise it all. So I'm sure that would have been factored in. And this is what I mean when I say creative accounting. Yeah. It's not like they're trying to pull the wool over people's eyes or anything.
Of course.
But you can shuffle things accordingly to ease that burden. But also they can offer the mitigation that they also sold Harvey Barnes and Timothy Castagna as well in that particular window, even if they were too late for that particular one. They can say, well, this is coming down the line, so you know, we are making all our efforts. They won't be the only club in this boat as well. There'll be a lot of clubs that will be sailing close to the wind with this as well. I mean, and it calls into question the whole principle of it. I know it was brought in really to stop, you know, the lesser clubs from going out of business and ceasing to exist, and all these Phoenix clubs starting again. But at the top level, I think people are starting to question now its motives and what it's actually doing. Is it restricting aspiring clubs that do have the money to spend? I mean, people think Leicester haven't got money. They have got money. They just can't spend it. So that obviously impacts on their performance. I mean, what will be a game changer is what happens to Manchester City, I think. But no, I think Leicester are quietly confident that they're doing as much as they can to show mitigation. But the losses have been pretty brutal over the last few years because of the expenditure and the step away from selling one key asset per year, which did keep them going. So I'm afraid we're just going to have to wait and see, Rick.
We are, yeah. Final one for me, and you touched on it there with the word selling, but that's the one thing we've struggled to do in recent years, which I think has put us in the situation both being unable to strengthen, but also maybe then, complying with the financial rules. Leicester have simply got to get better at being able to move players on that are not the obvious ones that that everyone's, your Fofanas, your Madisons, your Barneses. If you want to sell a player and somebody doesn't want them, or they're going to give you a pittance for it, then you're not going to do that. But I mean, I don't really know the question I'm trying to ask you here is, but what other clubs seem able to do it you know, in your professional journalism career, what's going on, do you think, with Leicester? Do you think the valuations they're placing are too high?
In some cases, Rick, it's the players themselves don't want to go because the money they're going to get, they're not going to get anywhere else.
Yeah.
So, and there's been quite a few players that have turned down moves away. I mean, recently, Harry Suter could have gone, turned it down, wants to stay. Now, it might be the money, it might be because he sees a future for himself at Leicester still. But, you know, he could have gone to Sheffield United. Yannick Vestergaard's turned down moves in the past. So if the players don't want to go, you can't force them when they're on a contract. But I think also that the market has been frozen because of, I mean, we look at the January window. Not many clubs did much business at all in the last window. And again, the FFP has sort of created this frozen market now. I mean, I obviously speak to agents and they find it very frustrating because that's how they make their living. And they're struggling to get any business done. They go around and they try and instigate business and clubs are just shutting up shop and not doing any. And it can be very frustrating if you're caught then with an expensive squad and you're trying to move players on and there's just no takers for them as well. And the players don't want to go. That's ultimately what the combination is. But there's also, and I'll say this about John Rudkin, the director of football. He is also, he wants top money. You know, he does want good money. You know, he looks after that money as if it's, you know, top's own money. So he wants to try and get the best deals he possibly can for them. And he doesn't want Leicester to be seen as weak as well in terms of, you know, they can easily be pushed over to get a bargain out of them. So, you know, that they can be strong negotiators. Leicester, they have been in the past. I mean, certainly to get that deal for Maguire was extraordinary, wasn't it, really? £80 million from Man United. I mean, Harry played a role in that himself by signing a new contract when he knew United were in for him. So, you know, they can be tough negotiators as well. But obviously, if you play that strong hand sometimes, you know, people call you bluff.
I didn't actually have a question, Rob. It was more of a general wonderment, I think. I think the FFP PSR thing, a positive of it is it the glamorization of transfer culture in this country. I hope that that's kind of the end of it because it really got out of hand. But I mean, obviously, we said earlier, Leicester completely defy logic. There's, you know, you'd never have been able to tell what happened after COVID. And, you know, you mentioned that we had the seventh highest wage bill in the country, which is just staggering. But I think that the PSR thing is just, it's going to be chaos because we had that wage bill because we were in Europe and we were trying to adhere to UEFA's FFP. Then the Premier League have got their own PSR. The EFL have got their FFP, which I think Everton used in their mitigation that the EFL's rules are a lot more stringent than the Premier League's. But the problem is, I'm of the opinion if we've broke the rules, we deserve the fine because we were part of the 20 member clubs of the Premier League that voted for those rules. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether we've got mitigating circumstances or not, the thing that it does amuse me is that Everton have had their deduction. They may well get another one, but nobody really knows. Forest may get another one, but nobody really knows. But we paid the price because we got relegated and they didn't. And then, you know, Leeds and Southampton are going to end up in trying to get them in the court. So it's just an absolute mess. And
it needs looking at, doesn't it? It needs a uniform policy across the board, really. I mean, this whole principle of 105 million, is 105 million losses the same for Luton as it is for Manchester City? You know, it's that one figure that they trump out, 105 million over 3 years. 105 million pound losses for Luton would be devastating.
Yeah.
105 million pound losses for Man City, that's change they find down the back of the sofa in the players' lounge. It's, you know, it's a complete, it needs looking at completely. They either do it properly or they don't do it at all, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. That's not worth much. But, you know, it is farcical now how we talk about that sort of side of the game as much as we talk about the game. Mm. Because it's so important and having such a big impact.
And I think a lot, you know, like I say, it wasn't really a question. It was just a more of a wonderment because nobody really knows what's going on. And I think Forest mitigating circumstances, well, they could have sold Brennan Johnson for more if it was after, or I can't remember whether they said it was after or before the deadline, but obviously it must have been before. But Well, yeah, we could have sold Maddison for 80 million six, 12 months before, but we held on to him, you know, and various players that ran their contract down. And I just feel like even if we do get up and, you know, Leeds, Southampton or Ipswich come up with us, or, well, even West Brom or Hull maybe, but you've got no chance. You've got absolutely no chance because you can't spend any money. So you're going to have to go up with what you've got and hope for the best.
One of Leicester's biggest mitigations would be, well, we haven't gained an advantage from this.
Mm.
You know, this is an unfortunate circumstance, a tailback to the COVID era. And we've found ourselves relegated because we've tried our hardest to adhere to these regulations. You know, we did stop spending when we knew we needed to refresh the squad. The manager was wanting to refresh the squad. That created a negativity that was around the club, you know, and that resulted in relegation. I'd imagine that would be a major part of their any sort of defence.
Yeah, it's been a very positive day.
I think we've definitely done more depressing podcasts, to be fair.
I think inevitably it's going to be, you know, when it does come out, there'll be a loss there. But it's just how much, you know, they can shuffle around to make it look like, well, not like make it, that sounds like they're doing a bit of shifting around, like being magicians, putting things, rabbits out of the hat and all this lot. But, you know, you can... There are certain rules to this that they can write certain things off, so they don't like your own tax return, really. So I think that's what they've been working on. That's probably why they're being so low key. But I think it was significant that Enzo obviously thought he was going to get some finances in the January transfer window. Then he wasn't. Then on the final day, they did try to do something, but it was so structured in such a way that it was impossible to get out. I think that for me was a little bit of eye-opening for me, because it had shades of the Brendan before, when he said he was talking to players and trying to bring him in, and then he was told he couldn't do anything. I think they know exactly what the state of these accounts are, what the state of the finances are at the club post relegation, and then just trying to do a bit of housekeeping.
Right. Okay. Rick, you still there? Yeah.
I'm here, mate. Gosh. Yeah, I was just swatting up.
Oh, I was going to say, we're going to do a bit of who are you? Are you ready and happy to do
I'm
it?
I'm ready, mate. Yeah, ready.
Robin, I might as well put the kettle on. Yeah?
So it's one guess each, is it?
Per round.
One guess per round, yeah.
Thank you. Right. Let me play some Who Are You music. Been a while since I've heard this.
Who is your daddy? And what does he do?
Who are you?
You.
No, not me, you.
Yes, I am you.
Just answer the damn questions. Who are you?
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Yes, so one guess per round. Don't have to take it in turns. You can shout out whenever you're ready. But if you are wrong with that guess, you are frozen out until Rick delivers the next clue. So, Rick, you are the quiz master host. Today, are we going to do a Where Did He Come From, Where Did He Go afterwards as well?
We can, yes. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. We need some positivity, Rick.
Right then, first clue. He was born on the 14th of September, 1986.
Okay.
So he's 37.
Good era for me. I'm feeling confident.
Okay.
But no guesses.
So 37-year-old player. 14th of September. Now, obviously, Vardy's 37, but he didn't see him because his birthday's in January, I think.
5th of January?
Yeah. Wes Morgan.
Not Wes Morgan. No.
Right, come on, next clue.
Do you want me next clue? Okay.
Yeah.
So he made his debut for Leicester on the final game of the 2004-2005 season. Aged, well, he must have been about 18, 19 at the time.
Oh. Ryan McGiven.
No.
2004-2005, why is that significant? I'm crap with years. All merged into one. What era was that?
That was Levine. Levine, okay. It was back end of Mickey Adams, Levine era.
Right, okay. That's all I needed. That's enough. for me to be in the right ballpark.
Struggling with that one.
No guess yet.
Well, I realise, Rob, is that a bit before you were covering us?
Yeah, 2009-10 I started.
Sorry, mate. I should have. It was only because it's on a page that I was looking at earlier and it's there.
Rick, sorry, just to clarify. So what he made his debut, about 18 years old on the last day of the season?
Yeah, last day of the season, away at Plymouth.
He's 37. Okay. Right. I reckon you give me one more clue and I'm getting this.
Right. I'm going to throw... Do you want the next clue?
I think so.
This is going to be a random clue that I'm going to throw in that's going to help potentially Jake and Jordan. It's not going to help Rob. But then if we're still there, then I'll try and throw one in. So he was famously found to be arguing with a poster on Fox's Talk years ago. So he was found that he was posting on Fox's Talk.
James Wesolowski?
No, not Wesolowski.
That's a good guess. No, I mean, I've said numerous times, I'm not a Fox's Talk user.
Okay. Next clue then.
Hang on, he playing for us and he was arguing with you probably on Fox's Talk.
It wasn't me. It was a post called Manuel Pablo who managed to really rile him up, if I remember rightly. Yeah, he proper had a ding-dong with him.
I rate that.
And it turned out it was actually the football player. Do you want me to give you another clue then?
Yeah, I don't think that's helped us, unfortunately.
Okay. Right. So, I mean, he made his name at Leicester. He didn't make loads of appearances for Leicester. He only played 23 times in total. But it was, he didn't really feature for the next few years and then started to play more around 2007, 2008. And he scored his only goal in that season, which was in the League Cup away at Nottingham Forest.
It's not Chris O'Grady?
Nope.
Was it the Clive Clark game there?
That was the game. But it was the rearranged game that he scored. Hang on, your guess, pal.
Oh, yeah, I have.
You have. Right, this, George potentially got the best opportunity if Rob don't come in and steal it.
No, oh, I've got no chance on this one.
I remember he scored a goal against Forest and he's about that age. And he had lots of loan moves.
I can't even remember that far back. I remember the Clive Clark game more than the replay. Didn't the replay their goalkeeper score? We let the goalkeeper score.
Let them score because they were 1-0 up, weren't they, when it got abandoned at half time.
People are going to be screaming at the phones, aren't they? I can't think it would be.
I'm going to give another clue then, and I think Rob might. This stat gives Rob a fair game. He's currently the caretaker manager in the EFL at a particular club.
He's currently a manager.
He's age 37 at an EFL club.
Right. Well, it wasn't who I was going to guess.
This is a good
one. In the Championship as well.
My God.
There's not many caretakers.
Come on.
This is bad knowledge of the Championship here, isn't it?
I don't know half the managers in it.
Gordon Bennett.
I need to look at the Championship.
I'm running out of clues now, boys.
No, I'm sorry. I'm trying to think who's recently left a job.
There's been a few, though, hasn't there? That's the problem in the Championship.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I've got the club. I'm trying to think who's... I think
this is shocking. This is shocking, isn't it? We should have got this. I mean, even I should have got this one.
Do you want another clue?
yeah. This is bad, isn't it?
True. I don't even know where I'm going now on the clues, if I'm honest, that's going to help you.
What does his name rhyme with?
Okay, I'll give you the next clue I'll give you is he was left-footed. And was known to be able to take a free kick.
Is it Alan Sheehan?
Correct.
Yes,
of course.
He's current caretaker manager at Swansea City.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
That rings a bell.
I thought he was at Luton.
No, he went to Luton with. He was at Luton with Nathan Jones. Then when Nathan Jones left to go to,
Southampton?
Southampton, I think he went there. Then he ended up somehow at Swansea. Let me see how he ended up there. So he ended up at Swansea when Michael Duff went. So he must have been taken there. And then obviously Duff got the sack and he was taken over as caretaker.
He was all right, wasn't he? And he did have a lovely left foot.
Well, he scored a free kick in the League Cup away at Forest.
Was a sitter.
Sorry, Rob. I realised I should have kept it. The only reason I went for Sheehan, as I say, I've been looking through this book. I got it out and was a bit bored today. And it's on Sheehan's there, bottom right hand corner. So I thought that's a good one to go with. Mainly because I remember him arguing with. On Foxy's Talk, it's of Fossils and Foxes, mate. The OG, the big encyclopedia. I get the it
Bible.
Out for to bore Oscar, my son, with. I got it out for when he got home from school. But he's,
Rick, that'll make a great idea for one of Rob's pieces coming up. The story behind the player who argued on a fans forum, Alan Sheehan.
That's a good idea. When players fight back.
Yeah.
Does anybody, by the way, have any idea on where did he come from? Where did he go? I'll be honest, I haven't got a.
Didn't he come from the academy?
Academy and top marks if you managed to get whereabouts we got him from.
Sligo.
Yeah, I was gonna say, Bohemians.
It was Belvedere.
Oh.
He went on Leeds. Yeah. Permanently, and we don't do the loans, do we? So, yeah, you've got half a point there, Jordan. Well done, mate.
There we are.
More than Leicester in the last three games.
Well, yeah. It's your best score in about a year.
Things are on the up.
There we are. A positive note. Right then. Any other business before we wrap up? Rob, really appreciate you sticking around for the full episode. Anything kind of you want to add before we wrap up, round up?
What a great club you support. I've got to say, I'm really enjoyed 15 years of covering them. And as I said at the start of the show, it's been intriguing. There's always been something to write about, something to talk about. The characters that are around the club, friends I've made over the years. It's been it's remarkable. Whatever happens between now and the end of the season, you know, you're supporting a club that's part of the community and cares about the community, and I think it's a remarkable football club. Really do.
It's difficult to tell the future, Rob, but can you envisage ever covering another team?
Well, I've given up trying to predict the future. I mean, I have covered other clubs and worked at other organisations before, but this is the longest stint I've ever had. And I've been very lucky because everywhere I've gone, there's been some drama with the team that I've covered. I started with my hometown club, Tamworth, Markle Brighton's hometown as well. Mm. Just when they got into the FA Trophy final and got into the conference, that was a remarkable period. And then went and worked for the Birmingham Post and Mail, covering promotions and relegations, you know, Birmingham, Wolves, West Bromwich Albion. And then out of the blue, I got a call to come over and work at the Leicester Mercury. And since then, I mean, I should have known my first season ended at Cardiff with Jan Kermagant's Benenka, watching Lee Hughes crying in the corridor outside the dressing room. I've never seen a chief executive be so devastated. And then after that, obviously, you know, the Watford moments and all the incredible things we've experienced since promotion, European adventure. I mean, I've spoken to you. I mean, I never thought I'd end up in sat in Naples airport talking to you, Jake, about treatment of Leicester fans by the local police and things like that going around Europe, going to LA, standing on the side of the training pitch at the StubHub Centre and looking down the line and Engelbert Humperdinck is having a chat with Berkey and this is not real. This isn't surreal. Going to, they had a signing or a meet and greet with the trophy, the Premier League trophy, and it was in a little sports shop in LA. And I thought, there'll only be a few people turn up for that. And I arrived and they were queuing around the block to see Leicester. I mean, literally lines going around the block to get in to see Leicester City with the trophy in this little sports shop. That was a pretty surreal moment as well. You sort of think, realise then when, you know, you see Christian Fuchs and Shinji Okazaki taking penalties with Will Ferrell, that Leicester City are now on the world stage. And I'm sure they'll be back there as soon as well.
Yeah, it's impossible to predict. I'd say we wouldn't change it for the world, but sometimes maybe we feel like we would. Jordan, I'll leave you to last because you tend to have most of the any other businesses. So I'll come to you, Rick, mate. Anything you want to add?
No, not really got anything in particular. Just our hope and pray that we get a win tomorrow. I mean, a draw wouldn't be great either, would it? I think we need a win to calm the nerves. And they're a curious one, Sunderland. On paper, we should be rubbing our hands together. Jack Clark's out. They've lost four on the spin. They've obviously got rid of manager after manager this season. So you really, really hope that we can go there and use a little bit of guile and noose and really just get that win or hook or crook. I just want to see, that desire and mentality right through to the end. Because, you know, if we do go behind, we don't offer anything to get back into games. And I know we haven't gone beyond that often, but that's what we now need to learn. It's not about ability for these final 11 games. It's about mentality. We've got the ability, got it in abundance, but we've now got to put everything to one side because, you know, the stark reality, if we don't go up, our financial situation is horrendous. We've only need to just consider what we've been talking about. So go and get that win. We've just got to be mentality monsters. I hate that term that Klopp coined, but we have now. We've got to do it. And, you know, what will be, but no, nothing else to add.
Lovely rallying cry that, Rick.
Thanks, yeah, mate.
I've got a couple. One, I've probably never said this, but I owe Rob a huge deal of gratitude and thanks because without Rob, I may not be sat at the Athletic being his colleague now, because as he reminded me on my first day, must have been 2008 or 2009, I emailed him at the Mercury Sports desk and was there for 2 weeks. So was it 14, 15 years later? Now I'm Rob's colleague, so I owe him a huge thanks.
Did I give you encouragement?
Yeah, you're inspired.
I normally warn the young work experiences off going into journalism.
Then the final one, big congrats to Union FS again. I think they raised 1,130 quid from the food bank for charity in Leicestershire. So superb work as always from those. As Rick says, if you're going tomorrow, I'm sadly not, although I think there are still tickets available. I keep checking and I've got to be in London for 8 o'clock on Wednesday. So it's probably not the best idea, but get behind them because what win will really change the mentality. That's all we need. One win and we won't look back, I don't think.
Yeah, well, look, fingers crossed and we'll be back, end of the week with another episode. And Rob, just from all of us, thank you so much for your time. Appreciated. So yeah, thank you all very much for listening. Good luck to the boys tomorrow. Those 3 points have not been needed as much as what they have been. Any more so than that game against Sutton. So, thanks for listening, and we'll be back very, very soon.
Come and join the festival. It's a Leicester Fiesta. Social Podcast Network.